song. Now I expect Brian Bulaga to show up.
It's the impact it's had. We love it when he joins us. We missed him last week. He was on the tailgate tour. But we got him now. Back home again on his donkey and orange farm. It is the Packers' right tackle, and I'm sure a food sharer with Abby. It is Brian Bulaga.
Sure.
Brian, good morning. How are you?
Guys, good morning. Hey, I'll tell you this much. On that tailgate tour, I don't know how many people came up to me. This is just how, you know, popular you guys are. Came up to me and goes, how's that donkey farm going? You got any donkeys yet? And I'm just like, I'm like, no, I don't have any donkeys. But I appreciate you listening to my segment on the Wilde and Tausch show. I appreciate it.
So you guys are
extremely popular throughout the state of Wisconsin. So that's kudos to you guys.
I'm sorry to have created a misapprehension about your farm and what you may or may not have there. That's 100% my fault. Because you're such a professional at this radio thing now, I know you like to tune in to the program ahead of time. Have you been listening to our debate about, and again, I don't quite understand how Tausch is splitting this hair, but it's okay that Jesse took a bite of the pizza, but it's selfish and inconsiderate that he took a bite
Jesse
of the pizza.
Jesse is selfish and inconsiderate, though. That's what? Part of his charm.
Well, it's like his default setting, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, so Tausch, you're saying it's not okay to take a bite of your significant other's food?
Great question.
No.
Not sure.
I am totally on board. We are our family, we share food. We like trying, you know, Sarah likes different kinds of food. She wants to try what Max got, what I got, what Eleanor got.
Yeah.
I'm on board. And all I'm saying is what Jesse did in taking the bite of leftover pizza and then flopping it back in the Tupperware bin, is it selfish?
Yeah, you can't
yes.
do that. Yeah, you can't do that.
But you're saying you can't. But he's saying you can. That's the problem here.
Jason, if I may.
You may.
If I may.
Yes, you may.
So, Blue, they are a food-sharing family. They share food. They go out to restaurants. They share. So, is it the end of the world that he took a bite of this pizza? It's disgusting. No doubt about it. But that's what they do as a family. They share food.
Yeah, I mean, sharing food is fine, but, I mean, Jesse, did you just take a bite of pizza and put it back in the Tupperware and then put it back in, like, what'd you do?
I was throwing leftovers into my infamous lunchbox, which is a story of its own on this show at different points. So I was throwing some leftover pizza into the bin, and the biggest slice of pepperoni didn't fit, so I put it back in the container for Becca to have for lunch. But since she had the two biggest slices then, I thought, not a big deal if I take one little nibble out of the corner piece of this one.
One little moment.
I hadn't had any breakfast. I wasn't having as much pizza for lunch as I thought I would have. So I just took one quick bite, put it back in. She had the rest of it for the day.
I mean, listen, I met your wife, you know, at the event the other night. Seems like a lovely woman, but I will say this: there's no way she was okay with that when she opened it back up and saw a bite was missing.
She was irritated for 2 days, and then I found out on Tuesday evening that she was frustrated. She said I called dibs on the slice. That wasn't the case. I just wanted one quick bite. It was hers.
Yeah,
it was the opposite of dibs.
You take a bite, you might as well have just finished it. And then, you know, then she could have said, well, I called dibs. I'm like, sorry, I took a bite. I got to eat it now. Sorry. You just got to, but I mean, you got to bite the bullet one way or another. Like, now you're known as like, kind of like a guy that, you know, will take a bite of something, put it back in the fridge. Like, no, Abby would kill me. There's no way. She goes, how do you take a bite out of this and leave it?
Even though you share food at dinner, it's different, right?
Yeah, that's a different.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, that's a different story. Like sharing it as everyone's eating at once, and then taking a bite and putting it back in the fridge or Tupperware for someone else to get is completely different ballgame. Like this is, I mean, yeah, no, Abby would kill me.
So nice to have a co-host who makes sense, just logical, doesn't try to say both sides of an argument. Well, if you're a food sharing family, it's okay, but it's still selfish and inconsiderate. God,
Both things can be true.
Right.
Both things can be true.
But I do this all the time, and you kill me for seeing both sides of the argument. All right. So now that we've established that that Jesse is wrong and Tausch is wrong, and you and I are right, tell us a little more about your trip on the tailgate tour, because
We got to hear about the awkward. So you have been with Jesse has called you. You know Jesse now. You've been on this show for a year.
Yeah, this
how
is
did
good.
It go? Because Jesse basically came up and he was skittish to meet you, and it sounds like it was kind of an awkward first meeting, person to person. What did you take away from your meeting with Jesse?
No, I mean, listen, like I obviously know I have not met Jesse in person, but I was getting ready to sign a helmet because at every stop we had to sign three helmets that were either raffled or auctioned, whatever it was, whatever, and I was signing a helmet, and he, you know, I didn't really see, but out of the corner of my eye, I saw someone, and then he made an Iowa reference, and I knew his voice, so I knew it was him, so I laughed, and I was like, and I looked at him like, you're still Iowa's still in your head. You're still making Iowa references. You mean, even on the tailgate tour. There he is. And I don't know if it was awkward, but I knew it was him right away. Right when I heard the Iowa and the voice, I knew it was him right away.
Well, that clears some of
it. Laugh.
I didn't know that you knew it was me, and I thought you were irritated right away. Like,
so you gave a fake laugh. That was a fake laugh.
Yeah,
though, right.
It was a half-hearted chuckle because I knew he was still on the Iowa kick. I mean, you know, I told Jesse, you know, the great University of Iowa lives in his head rent free all day every day, and. Yeah, I mean, that's our first meeting in person. That's kind of how we wanted to break the ice, was making an Iowa dig. And, it was funny. But, you know, it is what it is. No big deal. It's okay. I mean, I know if I was walking up to Jesse, I know I definitely would have made a dig at Wisconsin. I just would have said, hey, bud, how's it going?
Yeah,
you know, maybe tap him on the shoulder.
He was never in Wisconsin.
Yeah, but he's a big Wisconsin fan. He's a big Wisconsin fan. You know?
So you knew it was him, though, because he thought you just thought he was some rando who was taking a shot at Iowa.
I knew it was him. Mm. I mean, listen, the voice alone. You know, I mean,
yeah,
no,
that's
but
that
like
was
going to
be
like,
my follow up. Is that better or worse?
No, like I know I can pick out his voice from a crowd, no problem. Like that's absolutely no problem. But. And then, you know, the voice, then plus the Iowa dig. I mean, not many people, you know, I'm in the state of Wisconsin, so, you know, maybe you get some Iowa banter, but no one came up to me and took shots at Iowa. Only Jesse.
One of a kind.
Yep.
So, like, that's how I knew. And, I mean, I know what you look like, Jesse. I mean, give me a break.
Well, I thought about that. We don't really ever see each other on the video stream because I never put myself up on it when you're on. So I mean, I wouldn't know if you knew what I look like.
I've seen you plenty of times on the video stream. I know what you look like.
Well, I'm glad we've cleared up and made your entire appearance thus far about Jesse. You want to talk about the Packers next?
Sure, whatever you guys want to talk about.
Okay.
I'm good.
We'll spend more time with Brian Bulaga. And Jesse will not be the center of our universe during the conversation. Tackle Talk with Brian Bulaga is next. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.
You're listening to Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN. Missed any of the show? Find us on Wisconsin On Demand wherever you get your podcasts. It's free, it's everywhere, and it's for you.
Famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none.
I apparently need to clarify this from earlier in the week. So, continuing with two of the greatest right tackles in Packers history, Forrest Gregg, then Brian Bulaga, then Mark Tauscher. Just to be clear on what the pecking order is, because I believe I called Brian Bulaga the greatest right tackle in Packers history. Somebody didn't catch the joke that was taking a dig at old T. Yes, Forrest Gregg, better than both of you, but just by a little. Tackle Talk between Tausch and Bulaga begins now.
All right, so Blue, we missed you last week with your out on the tailgate tour, but Domofsky brought the goods on Friday with the Zach Tom talk, which I know we've heard and we discussed a little bit. But from your perspective, you're pretty good buddies with Elgton Jenkins. You played with him. He was on the tailgate tour. Am I crazy to think that if you're going to make these moves, Elgton is now in what, year 6 or 7? Who do you think's a better center prospect moving forward, Elgton Jenkins or Zach Tom?
Elgton. I think Elgton's a better center prospect than Tom. I think from the standpoint of Elgton, obviously, has been playing. I mean, he's played everywhere along the offensive line. Elgton had a stint at center for longer than 4 snaps, which that's all Zach Tom had was 4 snaps at center. Mm-hmm. Elton's had snaps at center, and he was pretty dang good at it. So if we're looking at, you want to keep a guy like Elgton Jenkins in the building, which the Packers do, and I know Elgton has a couple years left on his deal, but after this deal runs out, you know he's a good player, you know he's steady, you know he can play center. Why let a guy like that walk out the door that probably would be willing to play center down the line? Keep a guy like that in the building, a guy that knows the offense, he's a good veteran presence, you know you're going to get high level of play, and put him there, then build around it, right? Draft another guard or buy another guard or whatever it may be. But I said this, you know, Jason, you know, on Monday we talked about this on the Homer Hour. There is absolutely no way you are moving an all-pro caliber tackle to play center. It's just not happening. Every general manager in the NFL, because if they think otherwise, they're going to be fired soon, that thinks you put a great tackle into center because some personnel guys in the building believe he could be a Hall of Fame center, could be, maybe, we don't know, they will never do it because everyone knows the tackle positions are the most important positions on an offensive line. Every GM knows it. That's why every GM is always looking for great tackles to play. I understand that there's great pass rushers up and down defensive lines, but most of the time, the highest paid defensive linemen are defensive ends, and you need to have great tackles to block those guys. So why would you move one that when most, and it's admitted by our own GM, most teams play nickel anyway. So that means there's 4 defensive linemen, the center is uncovered, and he's just helping guys from time to time in pass protection. Why would you take one of your best blockers and say, yeah, you can help the guard at times, instead of having him out on an island blocking a top-tier player, you know, 90% of the game on his own? It's just never going to happen. It's ridiculous. I get Rob might have heard that from someone inside the building, which, hey, maybe that's what some people think. Mm-hmm. But I assure you, if you bring that to Goody, hey, Brian, let's move Zach Tom, our best pass blocker, into center. He's going to look at him and go, you nuts? Are you kidding me? Not a chance. Not a chance. No way. No way.
But Blue, in fairness, that's where Goody drafted him, was to play center, and he has said that he's got a ton of potential there. So it's not like Rob is making this up from nowhere. He heard
we know that. Yep.
Multiple people.
Yeah.
And I agree. First off, Zach Tom is a stud. And I think Zach Tom is going – but he's going to want to get paid. He's going to want to stay out at tackle. The Elgton Jenkins part of this is interesting because the reason the conversation started was I just asked point blank. Josh Myers has 1 year left on his deal. You know how this game goes. If they want to keep Josh Myers, they will preemptively go offer him a deal around what Biadasz got, which is, you know, somewhere 9 to 11 million a year, and sign him long term. They're not going to do that. None of us on this panel believe that. So then you have to start thinking, what's next for that? And my question, Elgton Jenkins has been so good. He's played left tackle. He's not a big fan of right tackle, but he's played left guard at an incredibly high level. Is it there where you just start thinking, let's go through this year, we'll go, and if something happens to Josh Myers, Elgton Jenkins will be your center moving forward. Is that what you would do?
Well, I mean, before I, you know, look to potentially pay a center from the market, right? Like go out into free agency or take a chance on drafting a young guy and placing him at center, you know you have a built-in guy in the building. Like you got a guy in the building that can do it and play at a really high level. And then you can maybe draft a guard or go pick up a guard in free agency that probably won't cost as much money as, you know, you can probably get a guard, a good guard, for $4.5-5 million or something like that. Then you have Elton under contract. And then when Elton's deal comes up, you know it's not going to demand the same amount of money as it would if he was playing left guard. You just know it. I mean, we'll just call it what it is, right? Like, all pro guards get paid different than all pro centers or Pro Bowl centers and Pro Bowl guards. It's a different market. And I get Elton would have to understand in his head that, like, I'm not going to get paid as much playing center as I would guard, but I know the longevity of my career can be extended if I play center. And that's the one thing I look at is as guys get older in their, you know, career, obviously, as I did, I had no choice. I was playing tackle no matter what. I can't play guard. I never could play guard, and I'm sure as heck not playing center. But a guy like him that's so versatile that can play up and down the line is as time wears on and your body can't do the same things it did, say, 4 or 5 years ago, and you can play center and play it at a high level, why not? Why not? You have a guy built in that could do it and understands the system, has a good rapport with the quarterback, is a leader on that team. You have the guy already in-house. You can just move him one spot over, draft a guy, maybe go pay a guy or something like that, and he can play left guard.
How about this? How about you take the guy that was one of the highest graded left tackles in the NFL before he tore his ACL in 2021 and play him at left tackle?
No, I don't think he tore his ACL. He didn't tear his ACL.
Okay, we don't have to relitigate the fact that I forgot that. Thank you very much. Okay. How about that? How about you play him at left tackle? He had, I have the stats in front of me from Pro Football Focus. He allowed 13 total pressures in 8 games. He had 1.5 bad runs at left tackle. He was really good at left tackle. Now, he was not good by his own admission at right tackle. But if you're going left guard to left tackle, it's different than going from left guard to right tackle, right? Everything's mirrored. We know the old Josh Sitton quote about wiping your hand, wiping your butt with the other hand, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Why would it be? Let's not move one of our best blockers to help out at center. Why don't we move him to left tackle instead? And you spent time with Rashid Walker, too, so I want to get your thoughts on your confidence level in him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, Elton can play left tackle. I don't think it's out of the question. But my only thing would be as we move later into a guy's career, right? Mm-hmm. Like as guys move on in their career and get a little bit older, and you know the game just starts to wear on your body. I mean, is he going to be the same guy out at left tackle as he would be 2 years ago, as he will be 2 years from now, I guess is my question.
Great question.
And he doesn't consistently play left tackle right now. So that would be my only thought process on that, especially, right, we look at this draft and say they do draft an offensive lineman in the first round. That's probably who, unless Rashid Walker wins this gig outright and makes a giant step this year and plays really well. I mean, you kind of look at it as if they draft an offensive lineman, they're probably drafting someone in the mold of a left tackle or a tackle in general that could potentially play guard, right, I think. Mm-hmm. So if you draft a guy in the first round and you know left tackle is going to be a competition, right, no matter what, if they draft an offensive lineman high, he's going to be in competition with Walker for the left tackle job, and it's up to Walker to win that job. I don't think you would draft that guy and not – earmark him to be a left tackle down the future and say, hey, we're going to move Elton out the left tackle. Now we got to fill the guard and the center spot. Like, I don't think that would be something they do. But again, I have no idea.
Let me give you two scenarios, Brian. All right. And then take me through each of these. The first one is that Graham Barton, right? The guy who played left tackle at Duke, but projects as an interior guy in the NFL, which we know the Packers are great at taking left tackles and playing them elsewhere, right? Including you, right? And Josh Sitton and da-da-da-da-da all the way down the list. Sean Ryan was a left tackle at UCLA. Now he's a right guard. Let's say Graham Barton is available, whether they trade up to get him or stay put, and they take him. He is not a left tackle in the NFL from all accounts. That's scenario one. Scenario two is, none of the offensive linemen that they like, including Mims, is available to them at 25, and they don't take an offensive lineman until the third round. Now, again, mm-hmm. we've seen rookies come in and play, even in third-round picks or further down the draft, so it's not impossible. But let's say that it's not a guy that's ready to play right away. What do you do, and how confident are you in Rashid Walker to be your starting left tackle for 17 games in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can do it. I'm confident in that he can do it. I think we need to see that same consistency to start this year out as we saw at the end, right? Like, I think the trend is very good right now with him. And listen, I got to spend time with him. Mm-hmm. I think he's a big guy. Like, he is a very, you know, you look at him and he looks, he's very prototypical left tackle, especially in today's NFL, the way that these guys are built and everything like that. So he's got that profile to him. And now my only thing would be when he does get the start from day one and he's not rotating and it's his gig and he wins it over, how does he perform throughout the season? Because we saw at times last year when he was the full-time guy early on, it didn't really look right. He wasn't playing well, probably to his own admission as well. And then he got into the competition with Yash and they were splitting time and then finally won it over and he played solid. So I'm hoping that same confidence carries from end of the year to start of the year. Now, my only thing would be if it's not that, right? Like, say he does struggle a little bit early, how quick are they then to potentially move an Elgton Jenkins out to left tackle? Could they do it? They may. I don't know. And my whole thing would be if they do, it all depends on what they do in the draft. Do you get a guy like Barton? Because, like, I think Barton can play left tackle in the NFL. I do. I mean, I've watched him. I've watched
cut-ups
of him.
Those short arms, man.
Those short arms guys are the worst.
Yeah. Homer had me do a little research on him, so I did. I watched a couple games of him and cut-ups and things like that, and I like him. I think he's a good player. And then you saw his testing numbers, and I'm not big in testing, but you saw the way he moved and his abilities to move in tight spaces, and the dude can play. So, you know, the people that project him at center, I think you're cutting him short. I really do. Now, obviously, if he gets into a training camp and he literally can't do it, then okay, there we go. But I think you're cutting him short by saying he can't do it, if that's what all the talking heads on TV, the Kuipers and all them, are saying. I think you need to relook at the tape, honestly. But it's all dependent on what Green Bay, what they do. If they don't, like you said, Jason, if they don't take a guy to the third round, what we see right now is kind of what we have to assume what we're going to get.
Right.
Walker, Jenkins, Myers, Ryan, Tom. And we don't know the depth behind it. And that's what I'm worried about. And that's the only thing that concerns me going into this draft. If we don't get a guy in the first or the second, and I'm not saying third round guys aren't ready to play right now. I'm not saying that, but you start to put that variable in what exactly you're getting when you're picking guys in third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. You don't know exactly what you get until they get on the field and play in real snaps, right? Like,
right.
There's a difference between practice snaps and real snaps, and even preseason snaps and regular season snaps. You don't really understand until you see it. And how much will the Packers be willing to play a third or fourth rounder right out the gate with their new 50-whatever-million-dollar quarterback? I don't know. So, like, we have to assume that they're confident in Walker based on what they see early on in OTAs. And what they see early on in OTAs obviously is not going to impact what they do in the draft, because if they're dead set on a tackle and they want to trade and make moves to get that tackle, they're going to do it regardless, right? Like, that's going to be done. But I personally, I'm fine with them with Walker starting out at left tackle. I'm fine with it. I think, obviously, I'm not going to be watching OTAs and training camp like you will, Jason. I won't be able to see those things. But based on what he showed on tape last year towards the end, when he was confident and he won the job over, there's no reason to believe that that won't carry over into this season. It should even be more he should even feel better about everything going into this year. Right. At least that's the way I always looked at it.
No, you're right. And maybe they get a David Bakhtiari type. Maybe they get a Corey Linsley type, a guy who can play right away. Maybe that they do have that happen, and that changes everything.
Correct.
But they have to be fine with the starting five they have, because there's no guarantee they're going to get a guy that can hit the ground running like some guys have done. Right?
Yeah,
and
I mean, listen, like we all know it. It's hard to find Corey Linsley's and Dave Bakhtiari's. Like, those are all pro players, right? Like, those are
right.
Those are hard guys to find, and count on finding those guys in later rounds. It's really difficult. Not saying it can't be done, but it's difficult. And even if you would look at, Dave was forced into action because of my ACL. If you watch Dave's first season starting at left tackle, you would not have guessed that he turned out to be the player that he became, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you would have never guessed it based on watching him. Obviously, he made tons of improvements from year one to year two and three and on. And even, I mean, Corey was a different story. And I say it again because it's that center position, right? It's not, I'm not saying it's easy. It's a very mental game, which Corey's obviously a very smart guy, but it's not as physically demanding and as the other position. So Corey, being a very smart guy, he's strong guy, he's athletic, was able to jump in there right away, not without hiccups. I'm sure if you heard the audio copy of a lot of those games, there'd be a lot of obscenities thrown at him from Aaron throughout those games. Like, if you were to go back and listen to the audio copies. Not saying there wasn't hiccups, but you know what? When you have a guy that ended up being an all-pro caliber guy, he was able to step in and do it. But that's saying you can find those guys every time, and it's not easy, because if it was easy, every team would be waiting until the third, fourth round to pick offensive linemen, and there'd be no first-round linemen. Like, we can wait on linemen. We're going to find great ones in the later rounds. It's just – it's hit or miss, and with the Packers' depth, I feel like you have to invest in it a little bit earlier. And that's just, and I'm not saying all first round picks pan out, because they certainly don't, and all second round picks don't pan out, because they certainly don't. But you like your odds better of inserting a guy to play sooner than later in those rounds, and that's historically, if you look at it, that's what it is. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that's just the way it is.
Yep, and to your point about David, I remember him saying it very clearly. He played well at left tackle for a rookie. He always said, I didn't play well for a left tackle. I need to be better. And to your point, he did. He became a great left tackle eventually. Brian, you're great. Always great to catch up with you. Thanks for talking some sense into Tausch about this pizza-biting incident. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
All right, guys, take it easy.
That is Brian Bulaga, owner of the most famous fictional donkey farm.
At that donkey farm.
In Florida. Tausch, raise a Coors Light to our friend Brian Bulaga for spending some time with us.
Yeah, we had a Coors Light the other day at the tailgate tour. Coors Light brewed with a 3-step cold process called lager, cold filter, and it's cold packaged, so it's made to chill. And the mountains on Coors Light's cold activated bottles and cans are blue. That's when you know it's chilled to perfection. That's why it is Coors Light in my hand when I need a moment to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We'll kick off the 10 o'clock hour in 2 minutes. Stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.